Hello and welcome to Leaning Into Light's featured interview for December 2019. My name is Jessica Rios. I'm the founder of Leaning Into Light, and this is one of our free monthly recordings to support you, our listeners, to lean into light. What does that mean? It means to choose to recover from pain and suffering and loneliness and frustration and all the yucky, ouchy feelings in life into a place of feeling healed, feeling resolved, feeling joy, feeling connection. This is one of the gifts that we give these monthly recordings to support you, to support humanity, to lean into light. So grab a pen and pause if you need to and take notes to emphasize what you'd like to bring into your life from our conversation today. Today, our conversation is called Leaning Into Dark. And I would like to welcome Kirsten Rose, our special guest for the day. Welcome, Kirsten.
Hello.
So a little background about you, Kirsten. Kirsten is a mother, an energy healer, a singer-songwriter, and a celebrant, living and writing in the ever-changing colors of Vermont. Her world travels infuse her work and family with vibrancy, openness, and joy. And her love for the earth and the divine inspire every aspect of her life. I want to share a little blurb about how we met Kirsten, or really more about kind of the feel for the call and why I wanted to interview you to give listeners a little bit of background. So Kirsten, you and I have known each other for probably around 20 years, and you've always been a deeply beautiful person, deeply sensitive, deeply attentive. And Kirsten actually sang at my first wedding, and it was a gorgeous song. Was it Give Yourself to Love, Kirsten?
It was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So beautiful. And so I've always been touched by you, and I wanted to interview Kirsten today because maybe 6 months ago or so, we were in a conversation and you brought up leaning into dark. What about the dark? And I said, yeah. What about it? Let's talk. And, you know, this has come up with other people too. And with you, you know, the dark matters. There's deep soul here. Mm-hmm. However, it was with you that something really struck a chord with me as like, oh, I would love to have that conversation with you and share it with listeners. So that's why we're here today. And a little bit of background. And I just want to start with a question, Kirsten. You are a celebrant. What does that mean?
I am a celebrant by occasion. So a celebrant is someone who offers ceremony, ritual for very traditional ceremonies like weddings and funerals. And I'm drawn to things of a slightly more offside nature. Things like, I recently had a friend whose daughter was leaving to go to college. So creating ceremonial space for that to happen. And it's becoming much more common, but things like mother and baby blessings. And I'm deeply interested in grief ceremonies. Although that's not something I lead, it's something that I'm moving toward. And really, deaths and endings of all kinds. We have them daily, and I'm sitting here now even looking out at these beautiful leaves that are falling from the trees here in New England and covering the ground, and it's like, you know, it's all around us continuously, as well as all the ways in which the new things are coming in and the birthing is happening. And they're so intertwined. And so as a celebrant, I'm just always looking for ways to support people in those transitional moments and in deepening their awareness of what's alive for them at the moment.
Whether it be the loveliness of life or the little bit deeper death pieces of life that are sometimes harder to be with. Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Gorgeous. So I feel like you just gave us a dive in, a little bit of a taste of some of the depth that you bring. And let's go into that. So leaning into dark, what does that mean to you? And yeah, why does that matter to you? What is that?
Well, it's been a tremendous journey to get to a place where I feel like now I choose to lean into dark. Dark is a dance partner that I've had for a very long time. And sometimes I've been, you know, kind of thrown out onto the dance floor with this partner I really didn't want to have. So in those moments, it wasn't a leaning in, it was getting thrown in. And, you know, in my, I don't know, maybe mid-20s, I started becoming aware of this idea of the dark. Happenings like, you know, the breakup of a relationship and falling into deep darkness that touched so far beyond just a relationship ending. You know, it was a marriage partner, and it touched something so far below the surface of just human interaction. And I was completely lost in that terrain. And I got quite swallowed in it. And through, I don't know, what felt to me like grace, you know, found my way back up and out of it with support from friends and, you know, people who are professionals in the world of perhaps coming back into the light, right? And then I realized that the actual dark as all the ways that it touches our psyche. Mm-hmm. And so then I started getting really curious, like, wow. So I'm actually really, at the time I was thinking to myself, I'm really afraid of the dark. Like literally, I don't want to go for a walk outside because it's dark out, was the place that I used to be at. And I had this beautiful friend who was a therapist, and his suggestion to me at the time was, take the dark as your lover. And I thought, what? He said, all the sensations, you may find that they're actually the same as when you're with a lover. And I was like, okay, that's just intriguing. And I'm a Scorpio. And let's see, dark lover, that sounds about right. So I started going on walks in my neighborhood in Lake Tahoe, where I lived at the time. And it was incredible. I started just playing with, okay, what are the sensations coming up in my body as I walk into the dark?
And you mean in the dark at night, right?
Yeah. Like literally outside, it's wintertime, so it's deep dark in Tahoe. We didn't at the time have much light pollution. So it was physically dark outside at the darkest time of the year. And the sensations in my body, as I recognized them first as fear, when I put my attention to this sense of like, okay, what if this was just a lover coming up behind me? And suddenly the fear had a different flavor. And although it was still like butterflies in my stomach, suddenly I was welcoming them. And then there were like ripples. This is an exercise I highly recommend to anybody who has a fear of walking out in the dark. is just getting in touch with those sensations. And it can be fear in any moment, really. What if I welcome these sensations as though they were a beloved? And that began my transition from a fear of the dark to an intrigue and then a growing relationship with, to the point where I now dive into the dark with arms spread wide open in a swan dive. But that's also come with a whole lot of time in that place, being lost without solid ground, not understanding where I am. But that happens with initiations of any sort.
Yeah. So beautiful explanation, beautiful share about how you went right into it and went into the dark and invited yourself to see it as a lover, and had this just profound transition in how you were seeing the dark. Mm-hmm. And when you think of the dark, when you think of what it means to you, you know, this was the beginning for you of the conscious choice to see differently. And you're actually talking about the dark at nighttime, the really dark outside dark. Do you also, you know, is this the beginning of an expansion into the dark as pain, the dark as grief, the dark as confusion, those kinds of places? Or does that not fit into that, the dark for you? What is the dark?
It absolutely does fit into those places. And for me, it's such a curious thing. I don't have all the answers is the first thing I can say. That is absolutely for sure. And I'm still on a journey. And I think, you know, part of the conversation with you that's so much fun is like really asking those questions. Okay, where do these places, where do they overlie one another? So if I'm learning how to love, actually physically being in the dark in this place that was previously scary, well, what does it mean to be in the dark? Like people could have like dark thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not necessary. You know, a lot of people are afraid of those dark thoughts in this culture. But what's happening in those dark thoughts? What are they like? Like you said, suicide, depression, grieving, all of those places, what happens if we go through the same process that I went through to welcoming them, mm-hmm. and taking them in as a beloved? Mm-hmm. What happens to those things when they're no longer pushed out? Mm-hmm. Or relegated to like the other side. So as I've been playing with that, it's like I'm seeing this one way of looking. Like I've played with the ideas of, okay, there's the light and the dark, right? We're in this world of duality. And so we could look at it from, okay, what's on the side of the light? What's on the side of the dark? And there can be pleasant and unpleasant things on both sides. And then as I play with it more, I'm almost finding there's also another place of dark that is beyond even those experiences of our humanness, mm-hmm. those dark emotions, those dark places that we go inside that are painful. And then there's a dark that I'm discovering is so expansive that it holds all the rest.
Mm-hmm. It just flashed a vision of outer space. I mean, right? It's just so, so dark out there.
Absolutely.
And it does hold in a big way. So, mm-hmm. yeah. Okay. So another place beyond those. And is that a, is that an energetic thing? Is it a physical thing? Is it, what is that place? Is it a, an emotional thing?
Great questions. What is that place? Well, I think one of the interesting things that I'm finding is that it's a very experiential thing. Mm-hmm. So that I think the answer to that could be different for everyone. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, we can be in a conversation that's about, you know, for each person, you could ask them, well, what does it mean? What is the dark to you? You know, and whatever that represents for an individual is going to affect their experience. And like, let's say I invited you, like right in this moment, to take a deep breath and just begin to feel the rise and fall of your breath. And I'm going to stop for just a moment there and just make sure, is this okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you good with our, because I find sometimes to talk about it is trickier than to just experience.
Uh-huh, yep. And I'm picturing all our listeners in their commute hour or wherever they are doing laundry and pausing for a minute here. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we can settle into the breath, even if it's an eyes open breath because you're driving. You could still perhaps imagine this pulsing of your breath up and down and reaching up. And yeah, we are definitely getting into the energetics. You know, yes, your breath can move. It rises and it falls within your body. Yeah. And it expands and contracts within your body. And then imagining, well, what is that when it moves beyond your body? And there's an expansion. If we imagine the expansion going out beyond our body, beyond our car, beyond our home, our community, the whole place where we are, this hemisphere, this earth, what do you experience as you just continue to allow expansion? And how far can you expand before perhaps inkling of discomfort might come in and ask you to come back in and contract? Or how far can you go out beyond the earth, beyond this atmosphere, into the solar system, into the galaxy, into the what? The universe. Like what's out there? You know, and those can be physical spaces, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't physically get out there. And yet, can we still touch on that place? And in what way is that real? Is that real for you? You know, maybe not. For me, it's incredibly real.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So reaching out into that darkness that I know exists, right? I know it from an experience of touching out with my energy into that. And I know it from pictures of the satellites and looking out at the night sky and, you know, trusting in the science that has taken us into deep space, trusting in the science of the black hole and, you know, what lies beyond that we might not know, trusting in the science of their discoveries of an event horizon. And so how does all of that relate to us here and the darkness that we find when we go inside? And maybe we're thrust there because of a painful life situation. How, you know, it is a continuous question for me and a journey. Like, how are those things related?
Yeah. And it is in my observational, you know, experience, it is the rare thing, what you're choosing to do, to actually choose to look at it, to breathe it, to listen to it, to be curious about it. Because generally speaking, we're told when there are difficult experiences, pain, when we're sobbing, all those, you know, oh, here, have a little cupcake, feel better, you know. Don't look at it. Don't go into that. It's too scary. It hurts too much, all these things. And we certainly don't want to talk about death in the West. The East is different. So what you're doing is a courageous intimacy with a place that's just as much here as the light side, you know? And are they even dark and light? Who knows? That's how we experience them. So Kirsten, how does, you know, can you share an example or a story about how the dark, how leaning into the dark, how choosing to be intimate with that place, to look at it, to be with it, shows up for you?
The most recent thing I would say is when my beloved auntie was dying. She raised me from when I was 6 weeks old. My mom in the 70s had to go back to work. And so I was in the care of my Aunt Laura until I was two. So she was my attachment. She was my mother figure. She was my coming home. And last year in October, so 2018, I got the phone call that it was the end of her time, and if I wanted to see her before she died, I should come. I was supposed to be going to my schooling, which was out. I'm doing this gorgeous program called Centaurus System School of Energy Awareness out in Santa Cruz, California. And it's given me, it's been huge in expanding me into this journey of darkness. It's not the focus of the program. And because it's so important to me, it's giving me new framework to work with darkness that I didn't have before. Mm-hmm. So I was supposed to go to California, and I got the call that Auntie was dying while I was packing to go to California. So my husband and son and I packed for the three of us, put the dog and the cat in the car, jumped in our car, and drove from Vermont to Michigan. And the grief of losing this person that has been like a mother to me was really tremendous and deep. And compared to like when I lost my grandfather, who was also so precious to me, and my world fell apart in a new way when he died, and I didn't know how to deal with it. This was so different because of all the years I have spent diving into the dark after being thrown in the dark. I now knew I was going into the dark. And I knew that there were some markers, some signposts along the way. And I also knew deeply that I would be able to find my way back. And so sitting with my Aunt Laura, instead of getting lost in the darkness and the grief and the sadness, I was able to sit in a place that was so much more expansive It was like, instead of being in a tiny dark closet, I was in Monument Valley lying under the stars of the biggest sky I've ever seen. Knowing that there were little stars sparkling, you know, those little signposts there, and that even in the moments when, you know, the clouds come and there aren't even stars sparkling, that I was being held. And so, the darkness has become for me a vast, expansive cradle where death happens and where birth arises from, where the keening for my Aunt Laura dying is mixed with a song of celebration because she was ready to go. And it was so beautiful because I felt like I could stand in that space, which felt very dark, and at the same time be really comfortable and at peace with all of the grieving and sorrow as they flooded in, and all of the cousins came together, and all the aunts and uncles that were still living came and went in her room. And my cousin, who was her daughter, and I would sit for hours and hours and overnight, and just letting the waves kind of come and wash in and wash out. I wasn't locked into the darkness anymore. It wasn't being lost there anymore. It wasn't getting stuck in a terrain that I didn't know anymore, or in distortions of that looked like pain and grief and endless sorrow. It's like I knew that it held something far greater than all that.
And it's really like what I hear, and when I picture you in that place with your Auntie Laura, it's like you reached the edges for that moment, not forever, but reached the moment that in that moment you reached, wow, this range, this expanse, this terrain is big. This human being thing is really big. And I've looked at the dark and I've felt the painful grief of losing a body, a being living in a body who I really, really, really treasure. And it didn't kill me. It didn't, it just gave you more seeing. You could see more from that place. You were, like you said, not locked into it anymore. And thinking back to what you said a little while ago, you know, it almost seems like at this moment, it's not a dance part you don't want to dance with anymore. Suddenly it's, I like this dance partner. This dance partner gives me more access.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, and even just hearing you reflect that, it's like, well, it's not like, it is also a beautiful then affirmation of life and the light to reach out. Like, it's the deeper and farther to the expanse of the edges of the dark I'm able to traverse, then also it is the coming back in, the forming back into this body, this light, this place where we are moving through the world in light. And, you know, you mentioned before the Eastern cultures don't have the same relationship perhaps with death that we often do in the West. And one of my favorite things that I've learned along the way is a friend taught me what he informed me was a really simple Tibetan death meditation. Mm. And every time I've done it, I come back feeling more alive and more light, like the light that I am is able to shine brighter because I touch in to the darkness more deeply as well. Yeah, there's a beautiful Khalil Gibran. I haven't got it with me, but maybe you're familiar with something about carving, you know, the creator carving the lines on the mask. And it's, you know, the deeper they are carved in sorrow is as deep as they can go in the joy. Mm-hmm. And so that balance.
Yeah. 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 absolutely. It's sort of like, what can you be with? And if you can be with it all and just let it bring up the grief and the anger and the loneliness and the bewilderment and all the things that can be brought up in us. And you can actually be with that, meaning not running away and turning to escape through, you know, for me in life, sometimes it's been sugar, or to escape through alcohol, or anything that helps us get out of facing this this dark. You know, if you actually don't escape, we are being with more of life, and there is a lot of what I think of as power in there. To me, politicians don't have power, but not to go into that for now. But it's a personal power that we access that you're talking about. Absolutely. When you can be in the edges of it. Thank you for sharing that story about your Auntie Laura. And thank you, Auntie Laura, for the love you showed Kirsten. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask Kirsten, and you've just begun to touch on this a little bit. So, but what would you lose without the capacity to lean into dark, the willingness? And why is it important to you? Yeah, and you've started to talk about it. The more you're able to expand, the more you're actually coming back into this body where you're moving in the world into light. Say more, would you?
Well, it's like without it, it's on a couple of different levels. Like, first of all, we are in this world of duality, right? So without light, we wouldn't know dark, and without the dark, we can't truly know the light. Mm-hmm. Like, their opposites are complementary in this world. That's just true. And so because I know dark, I can know light. Because I know the depths of my grief and sorrow, I can know the depths of my joy. And so without dark, there's, for me, a flatness. There's a uniform vision that doesn't represent the all of possibility. It's only part of it. And without knowing that part of it, it's not knowing a part of myself. It's not knowing a part of others. It's not knowing a part of the divine. So my dance with darkness and my delight in like diving into it now as a resource point even gives me a fuller experience of life. And, you know, I've heard so many teachings along the way that just express this idea of accepting what is, you know, all of it is, and accepting it all. And it's like now, because of the work I've done and the amazing teachers and the support that I've found on this journey, I've gotten enough what I call resource so that I can actually dive into the dark and let it be a nourishing and nurturing experience. And it comes to a depth and degree of nourishment to me that is far beyond what I had experienced before. It's without the dark, my life would be more shallow.
You know, what's coming to mind for me is a picture of when I was in college. And I lived in a town called Chico in Northern California. And the feeling at that college, or one of the prominent sort of feelings at that college, and I think it's still true today, sort of a personality, is lots of sweet people. Lots of people who, when you go to turn in your, pick up your transcripts, or you go to pay your tuition or whatever you're doing, there's just sort of a sweetness, like a good, sweet energy in the air. And it's nice. It's a nice feeling. And underneath it, there's this, like I can't fully go into that. I can't fully trust that. Can that sweetness, I like the sweetness, but does that sweetness also know agony? Can that sweetness actually be with me when I talk about my postpartum depression? And so nothing wrong with the sweetness, just I see you, Kirsten, and I picture you, and you're among this collective of people who have chosen to be sweet. You are very, very filled with the sweetness I speak of. You back it up, you fill it in with the willingness, the courage to go into the dark too. So your range actually is really wide and makes you more accessible. Because, you know, as you talk about how, why it's important to you to lean into dark, it gives you a fuller experience of life. You wouldn't know light if you didn't know dark, all kinds of richness. You know, you actually become more empathetic. You can be more compassionate. You're not just a girl with a nice voice and a sweet face, you know, who can't empathize with some of the agony that humanity's been through. Do you find it gives you more empathy?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's and I find to that with the empathy, it's also like a capacity for compassion in a way that I didn't know in my younger years. In the sense that I don't need to fix somebody else's pain. So I can listen and I can really deeply know, and I can also sit out here and hold the space for you of you being whomever that remembers that this is all part of it. So we can sit with the pain and not get lost in the pain, because we can remember that there's also something beyond the pain. And I think that's something that's really interesting to me. A lot of the work I've heard of people doing, and some that I've just touched into but didn't work for me, in some forms of therapy where people like just really go into the trauma or into the wounded places and shout it out and, you know, fling about in all that pain. And then they maybe come out of that and are like, wait, wait, where am I? What does that have to do with who I am? Or they get lost in the pain of it. And it's like, there's a, a map forming maybe that can happen when you go also with a guide into the dark.
Map, M-A-P, map forming.
It's like, so this is where we are, but this isn't the end of the road, my dear. Right? And so just coming, tell me.
You've found a way to lean into the dark as a practice. It's a way of life. Yeah. And you're not, you get afraid sometimes because I think almost all humans do. Absolutely. But you don't stay there or turn away hardcore because of your fear. You kind of look at it and you still choose to go in because you know you're going to come out the other side, probably, right? But it's much richer, you've found, to go into it and to lean into the dark and to look and to befriend and to be with it than to avoid it.
Absolutely. And as far as that, like enriching my life and expanding my capacity for empathy, it's like, I mean, that's just what it does for me. And something else I'd just love to note too around that, that's really important, is it's not just a diving in blindly, as it used to be when I used to feel like I got thrown in. It's going in with resource. And so nowadays, when I know that there's going to be something that is really painful or really difficult, and some people might call it shadow work, this type of going into the dark, those aspects of ourselves that have been pushed aside, but they're rearing their quote ugly heads, right, in our lives. When I know I'm going to go into a place that is really big, I now know that I have to go into a place that is so loving and so nurturing. And resource myself to the max before I can dive into those painful, dark places. So I just want to leave, put that into the mix, that when people are going into the dark, it's really useful to get the tools that will support you in having enough resource to look without getting lost in the fear or lost in the dark.
Yeah, it's very proactive of you. It's very, let me take care of myself. This is big and I actually want to do the work. So let me take care of myself to do it. because I can say, without having done perhaps as much conscious work as you have around leaning into the dark, how do I want to say this? When we start to live with enough truth-telling and personal courage, that it actually kicks up some stuff with people, as people naming things that they see that they don't like, or as people responding to my, I thought, loving requests with some defensiveness and some name calling and things. It's like, that feels like the dark. I'm not sure what piece of it I want to look at right now, but there's a lot of stuff here. And suddenly I feel like I'm drowning, and not really, but kind of. And I guess I just want to acknowledge for listeners that this isn't easy stuff at all. And that said, and because it's not easy, most people actually never really step into conscious work with this. And a lot of people turn to shopping overeating, over anything, what we call addictions or external sourcing. And for those listening now who feel some inclination to lean into this, to look at it and to say, gosh, what's dark that's showing up for me right now? You know, it actually just is so rich and gives you so much more of yourself and so much less of a need, a desperate need for the outside world, so much more of an ability to resource it from a grounded, wise, whole place that not easy and worth it is sort of what, you know, comes up for me. So yeah, I love that resourcing piece. On the arena, on the topic, Kirsten, of resources, you've already mentioned a few resources, and I want to repeat those to start, but just looking for tools, resources to share with our listeners. You already went over the Tibetan death meditation. You went over your own practice, and you recommended it for others, of welcoming these sensations as though they were a lover. And you mentioned Khalil Gibran in the creator carving the lines on the mask and some of his writings. What other tools or resources can you share with our listeners?
I also mentioned this, and this would probably be a main foundational piece if somebody wanted to do deep work in both resourcing and diving into all the places, whether they are light or dark, just an expansion, is my, the schooling that I'm doing. They also have a monthly membership that anybody can join. You know, you don't have to do school. It's called Centaurus System. And you can find them at centaurussystem.com. And, they have monthly transmissions and meditations, just beautiful thoughts. And then the schooling that I'm doing is a truly deep, deep dive into not just energy systems in a healing capacity, which I'm doing the training as a healer, but also just in our lives and in the work that we have to do for ourselves. You know, as I was saying, finding resource. So that has probably been my most potent and powerful resource, in this work, Centaurus System. Mm-hmm. And also I do, an amazing breathing practice called Sudarshan Kriya Yoga. And that's, Sky for short, SKY, and that's through the Art of Living Foundation. And that has also been an incredible resource in my personal practice. It gives me a daily practice of breathing and meditation. And what that does is brings a stabilization into the nervous system. Because when you're doing any kind, well, just living life, you know, our nervous systems are so stimulated. continuously. And so how do we bring calm and ease into a nervous system that has this, you know, reptilian part of our brain that's like looking for the danger everywhere? It's like, yeah, having that practice. So I can highly recommend that Sky. As far as books and that sort of thing, one of my favorite books is called The Wild Edge of Sorrow, which is The Rituals of Renewal and the Sacred Work of Grief. And this is by Francis Weller. And he also runs some amazing, I haven't done them yet, but I've heard amazing grief rituals around the country. And I think he's based near you. Out in California.
Yes. And I have heard similarly stellar things about him. So great. The Wild Edge of Sorrow.
Yeah. Beautiful book with some resources right there in the book. And then there's always Clarissa Pinkola Estes. She is a gorgeous source for going into the dark. And one of my favorites is a series she has called Mother Night. Mm-hmm. And she takes us into the dark and the beauty of leaning into dark. Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned that you wanted to share a song with us before we close for the day. So go on ahead. We'd love to hear it.
Okay.
Way down low, where the rivers flow, and way up high, where the eagles fly, there's a light I want to know. There's a love I want to grow, and there's a life I want to live. There's a gift my soul was born to give. Do you know where your soul will go when you die? Will it leave you behind? 'Cause there's a light I wanna know. There's a love I wanna grow, and there's a light I wanna live. There's a gift my soul was born to give. In the dark, where all life starts, I want to be led where angels fear to tread. 'Cause there's a light I wanna know. There's a love I wanna grow, and there's a life I wanna live. There's a gift my soul was born to give. Born to give. Born to give.
Hmm. Gorgeous. Thank you for sharing, Kirsten. Is that a song from you? Did you write that song? Is that some, who wrote the song?
That's a song called The Gift that I wrote.
Oh.
One of those deep dives.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for being willing to open yourself up to a way of living that obviously for you is dramatically generous and gorgeous and enriching and just so potent in making your life more of a place that you want to be in. Mm. It's also such a gift to others. And you even in your presence right now, speaking with you, I, you know, so feel a fuller offering from your being than I did 20 years ago or 10 years ago. So thank you for the courage to step into that.
It's been a joy to be here with you.
Yeah. So yes, listeners, thank you for coming and joining Kirsten and I today and reflecting on leaning into dark. Show love today if you'd like to with somebody who could use an uplift, and send them the link here. We're not on social media, so if you'd like to sign up for our newsletter, you can. We send it about once a month. And again, this is one of our monthly interviews, and they're all available on my blog at leaningintolight.com on our conversations page. We'll be back next time, and we thank you so much for being